5:46 in the morning, crack of dawn.
6 in the morning.
It's an hour before 7 and I'm right there.
It's 6 o'clock, I'm hopping out of the bed.
So wake up!
Hello everybody and welcome to the morning after round 16. I'm Dusty. With me I've got Benny and Lukey. How are we, lads?
I'm good. I'm enjoying my last beer for a month.
Is it a range beer?
No. I knocked off a couple of ranges earlier in the day. The Wildside Oat Cream IPA that they released on Friday. I've knocked off a couple of them. I'm just on the Bolter Hazies at the moment.
Finishing off strong though.
Mm.
Range and Bolter Haze, you can't complain.
Yeah. So, yep. Had a good arvo.
I only had the Mega Hornets left from my haul from Black Ops, so I'm going to limp through one of these. I don't know if limping's going to help me any, being the 11.4% that it is, but we'll see how I end up at the end of the potty. So, yeah, spoiler alert, this is Sunday night to everybody out there. It's the preferred time to do it for us, given that, got a bit of space on the Sunday night. Fuck getting up too early on a Monday morning. Even though, Benny, that's your life, and Lukey, you seem to get up pretty early on a Monday morning. If I can avoid it, I will, absolutely. So, lads, what have you thought of the round of footy so far? It's been a bit of a punish to watch, to be fair. There's been a couple of good games in there, like Broncos-Cows were good. Obviously, the Panthers and the Roosters, a few talking points that come out of that, but the rain's really fucked it, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, man. That Dogs-Sharks game was a fucking mess. And then later on, even though the fields were, the rain had stopped and the fields were still boggy as fuck for Parramatta and South game, and while there was some points scored there, it was still a pretty average game, pretty poor ball control. And then the wind today, between Dragons and Raiders, and I thought that sort of put a damper on what could have been a pretty good game there. I thought it was a pretty shit game. Kicking game went out the window. You just had to hook it in the air and see what happened. So I sort of agree. There was a couple of good games. Roosters Panthers was all right. The Manly Storm one was kind of a weird game, but it was okay in the end, and that was about it.
Yeah, some crazy stuff, definitely. But look, here's how we saw it unfold anyway. Kicked off on Thursday night with Manly 36 versus the Storm 30. Now, again, Munster out of this one, Felice out of this one as well. Did shape to be a fairly good battle given where Manly were sitting on the table and how they've gone this season and Melbourne coming in. We kind of previewed it earlier in the week in our various potties and said that I didn't think that it would matter too much that Melbourne were missing personnel. Felt like they could have got the job done and it opened up looking that way. Manly making 5 errors in their first 7 sets. But did jump out to a 14-6 lead early here. Look, all in all, so Melbourne did 60 more tackles than Manly, but they only had one less set. So that kind of tells me that all the errors that Melbourne made were very early in their sets. Manly had 14 errors as well, still managed to win this game. I'll shift to you guys to kind of talk through the minutes by minutes and you know how this game unfolded, Benny, because obviously, you know, some fairly substantial stuff happening at the back end for Pappenhausen, especially in the Supercoach space. But to me, I think Melbourne definitely missed Munster and Felice down that left-hand side, and Manly attacked there. You know, Kohler got a couple of tries. Second one was really good. Olakau'atu just bitched Jaden Nikorima all night. Just a horrible decision to play him. He was completely undersized, and I don't think he's a first grader when you've got someone like Tyron Wishart in the team. But yeah, as you said, Benny, seesawed back and forth a fair bit. Manly got out to a very big lead late, but Melbourne, didn't they score 4 tries in 6 minutes? Something to that effect?
It was indeed, yeah. It was a Pappenhausen masterclass. He put Nass over, and then he had a hand in pretty much everything else after that. So it was, I think he scored 100 points, 100 Supercoach points in 6 minutes.
unbelievable. And he looked lame all game, didn't he? Like he did not look light. And then in that last 6 minutes, it was just like, ah, there's Pappy. You know what I mean? And even to your point, I think, Benny, you said like that very last play, if he's a bit more switched on there, he goes a distance almost, I reckon.
Anderson flipped it out to him and it hit him in the chest and he dropped it. I thought if he caught that, he ducks around the outside of that tackle and just takes off down the sideline and he would have had support.
Well, he was standing out to start with when it hit him. Yeah. He was standing out. So straight away, the ball just was dead and it was like, oh. But what the fuck was DCE thinking? He kicked it twice.
Yeah.
On that last play, he literally kicked it twice and it's like...
McNally would have had a fucking stroke when he saw that.
Well, he did. He said in the group chat, why the fuck are you kicking it? It was unbelievable. If you're going to kick it, like kick it into the grandstands. Don't try and keep it in play in a six-point game. Like that's just ludicrous play. Had quite a good game the other night, DCE, but then again, it kind of, you know, he just lacks like a bit of a cool head sometimes in those situations, you know, and that was just another one of those plays. Although, you know, after Olakau'atu ran over the top of 8 Melbourne Storm players to score that try, next time down, great play from him to just square up the line, fake the play short and hit Cooler Long. That was a money ball and a great line. And Justin Olam just, you know, in no man's land there. That was quite a good play there from him. But again, talking to that, them attacking that left-hand side with no Felice. But crazy, crazy old game. And I just, you know, it's one of those things where Manly played well enough to get the points, but they didn't actually play that well.
No, they didn't. Well, they probably did for like a maybe 30-minute period of the game because the first maybe 15, they were dog shit. And then, you know, then they pulled it all together somehow. Things just clicked and they put some points on the board and it was enough to sort of keep the Storm at bay. But it must really be worrying, Dez, the way that they can just concede points in bunches. You know, the Cronulla game earlier in the year, it was in the first half. Yeah, they came back in the second half, but it was just... And then, you know, the Cowboys last week, what'd they score? 4 tries in 10 minutes or something like that.
3-7, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, they just leak points really, really easily. So just a bit of defensive resolve is lacking there for the Seagulls. And it's probably... It might cost them the finals because, I mean, it is pretty tight and those for and against points are really going to matter. So the fact that they conceded those points there at the end might really come back to haunt them because, you know, they should have won that game by, you know, 16 to 20 points, really. It was a funny old game. It was good seeing Melbourne get done. I mean, it really, there's a lot of games this season where teams have lost one key integral player and they've just gone to the shit. Yep. You know what I mean? The exception being Brisbane. They seem to play well without Reynolds, and Penrith earlier in the year without Cleary were really good. But Melbourne were good without Pappenhausen. But yeah. They lose Munster, yep. And you know they start to sort of show some deficiencies.
I think Felice as well, man. Like Felice would have done a job on Olakau'atu, I reckon.
Nah, he plays right side, man. That's Kenny Bromwich's side. Yep.
Oh, sorry, it is too. Yeah, it is too. Well, maybe that's why. And Bromwich got subbed at some point. I don't know if it was an injury or not, but I saw him crouched over on the sideline with about 15 minutes to go too. So they'd obviously worked him over pretty hard. So my bad there.
When Melbourne was sans Hughes as well there for a couple of games, they looked pretty dog shit. So it seems either of those halves are missing and they're in all sorts. They just don't have a lot of depth in that halves position.
But, you know, at the end of the game, they put Meany up into the halves because they hooked Nikorima. They put Meany up into the halves and, you know, they start to look better. So, I know Meany's not traditionally a half, but he seems to be able to get the job done a little bit better than Nikorima, even Wishart. So, you know, maybe
he's in form. He's an in-form player.
And he's a skillful footballer, man. He really is.
He is, man. He's a very classy football player. And this is kind of where I have a look at how they've utilised Brandon Smith this year. Is it that Brandon Smith's out of form or that he's just not playing enough to affect games? I don't know. I just kind of feel like with all the troops that they've got out, Bellamy needs to play his best for bigger minutes. That's what I believe. You know, you're missing Welsh. You lost a shit ton of forwards in the off season. Play your best players.
Well, I think Brandon Smith got some minutes because I picked up Kamika Mika this week, thinking that he was going to get. He's been getting 45 to 50 minutes each week. But I believe that Brandon Smith got a decent chunk of minutes this week. So I'm just having a look at that. Brandon Smith, he's played 61 minutes. So that's probably the most minutes he's played all year.
Yeah, it was his 100th game too. So
I think he
was ripping in.
Remember we talked about it earlier in the season, how he was just going to, you know, I guess just pull Brandon Smith's minutes back at the start of the year and then just bleed him out towards the end of the season, just when they're coming into finals. And I think that sort of started to happen, where you're going to see Brandon Smith playing a lot more minutes, I think.
Supercoach studs and duds in this one. And again, doing this on Sunday night, these are pre-final updates, but most of the early games should have been well and truly completed by now. Cherry Evans, again, had a pretty good game the other night. He ended up on 118 with a few try assists, and he was goal-kicking with the injury to Garrick as well. And Cooler had a couple of tries there, but look, he's turned into a real solid football player. His defence is pretty underrated, I feel like.
Yeah, I do too. Yep.
He hits and sticks real well. You know, he's going to lock down that centre spot there for sure. And Pappenhausen, as we discussed, 135, and 100 of those came in that last 6 or so minutes, which is pretty phenomenal. Obviously, duds in this one. I'm just going to go straight to Josh Schuster again. Picked him up this week. I forgot to flick him just before the game. It hasn't hurt me at all because I've lost my matchup by a fair bit. But I think we've seen the most of what we're going to see for Schuster for the rest of the week, rest of the year. And I actually think that who are they missing out of the front row at the moment? Alawai. When he comes back, potentially, Schuster's not in that team.
Oh, I think Desi will carry him. I think Desi will carry him as that utility that can just jump on, play anywhere pretty much. You know, he can cover in the halves. So the thing is...
But they've got Dylan Walker for that, man. And he came back the other night. This is what I'm worried
about.
Yeah,
actually, that's fair. That's fair.
And Schuster was shit again. Gave away a penalty, missed tackles, knocked the ball on. It was just... Yeah, so I think maybe this is the time where he goes back to Reggie's and, you know, let's see you maybe in finals or next year, Josh. All the best. All right, moving on. So the Knights took on the Titans in a battle for what many anticipate to be potentially a wooden spoon matchup. And look, we actually put it together, the Knights, and we did a job on the Titans. 38-12 would have been a lot more if Tex Hawker could kick straight, but it was a bit windy and a bit wet up there too. Knights had 60% possession, and Titans made 14 errors. They just couldn't hold on to the ball. They couldn't mount any pressure. And look, I love backing young halves, especially ones that show like they've got a pretty good skill set behind them. So, you know, I've been pretty high on Toby Sexton, but geez, he's struggling at the moment. He is really, really struggling. And to be fair, though, like that whole Titans team is just it's a clusterfuck up there. Like, I just don't understand what's going on there. Their personnel is horrid. Aaron Clark's been picked in all 16 games this year. They look shit when he's on the field. You know, Fifita rotating off the bench, he's clearly their best weapon when he's out there. Brimson's look great. They're going to have a bit of a headache when Campbell comes back. But, geez, they're just forward of personnel up there. I mean... Look, what changes do they do? I mean, there's mail going around that Holbrook's done and dusted now, which I think to some extent is a bit unfair, but then you've got to look at it and go, mate, you had to make some changes somewhere along the lines, and I kind of feel like maybe he's bought a little bit on himself, but what changes do you make up there for the Titans, and where do they go, especially for the rest of the season?
Well, I think he's brought a lot of it on himself because this is his squad. He would have been behind the decision to let go of Fogarty, and to let go of Mitch Rain as well. You know, tell me they couldn't use fucking Mitch Rain right now.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, even for 50 minutes a game. You know, someone who.
But why haven't they like this? Okay, so why didn't they go after Jeremy Marshall King? Right? Like, there's a great hooker. Why haven't we heard them going after Verrills? Because Brandon Smith's coming next year and they've got fucking Connor Watson for another. Why aren't they throwing money at Chris Randall? You know, like there's three hookers right there that would do a way better job than what's currently happening. And that's where they're falling down. They've just got nothing going through the middle there.
Well, I also think that Aaron Clark's a better lock as well. Like, he actually has got good foot speed. You know, he gives him a little bit of ball playing at lock. Tino doesn't do that. Tino doesn't have a pass in his game. Unless it's an offload. So they're not getting that link man type play out of Tino. So that's where Aaron Clark could come in. You know, playing for 20 minutes at hooker and then run Tanner Boyd for the rest of the game. I'd do that for the rest of the season and see what you get. That's probably the first change that I'd do. Their outside backs are just fucking shitting the bed big time. Like, even Greg Marju, like, you know, he's got a pretty good upside, Marju, but, like, he had a pretty shit-ass game the other night. You know, probably two or three errors. Brian Kelly is just regressing. But, again, you know, what sort of quality ball is he getting? They skip him all the time and go to fucking Marju. You know what I mean? They're a fucking basket case at the moment. And you know what? They might need to just... I don't know what you do with Sexton. Like, do you leave him in first grade and he learns to play with, you know, like, he's picking up bad habits, surely.
Who do you replace him with?
Yeah, well, that's it, mate. You know, do you put Tanner Boyd in there? They've got Tyson Smoothie up there to play hooker. I don't know. Look, Paul Turner, man, like, you know, there was a big push on him in the off-season. Like, they've signed him, rah-rah, and apparently he's been playing the house down at Tweed. But he's just not doing anything. You know, I don't know if they're just not getting
him. You forget he's the 5'8", don't you? You forget he's the 5'8", and then he touches it, and you're like, oh, yeah, right, he's there. He's there. And, look, without their flashes of brilliance from Brimson and the likes of Fafita and even Tino to an extent, they've got nothing. And again, they just played that under-8s footy where they just threw it to Fafita early. Didn't really have a plan for him when he came on the field, and just his raw strength and stuff created a couple of opportunities. So hopefully for them, Kieran Foran to the club next year gives them a bit of direction and they pick up a 9 somewhere in the off-season. But not a great deal to write home about. As for the Knights, let's take nothing away from them. I think... To be fair, this was potentially our best, most complete performance of the year. We had a game plan and Milford and Clune just stuck to it the whole game. And that kind of shows Dom Young 3 tries, Eddie Lee 5 tries. You know, we knew what we wanted to do. We knew how we wanted to work their defence around. Our halves kicked really well for all night. Our forwards were really, really good. I thought Dan Saifidi coming back from injury was exceptional. Same with Clemmer. And Mitch Barnett missing a couple of Barry Beath. Coming back out for the second half was pretty good as well. So probably our most complete performance of the year there. Supercoach studs and duds in this one. Eddie Lee, obviously, 172, 5 tries, 5 line breaks with that too. Dom Young had 106, he had the 3 tries there as well. Benny, your man, Adam Clune, I'm pretty sure
you
had him as a pickup.
I got crickets from you 3 blokes the other night. Or 2 blokes. Dino gave me crickets too. Yeah, no, I got crickets about Clune, and I had this feeling that he had to do something. Like, if he was going to score 20, the Knights were going to lose to the Titans, so... He doesn't have to do a lot. He just had to throw it to Hoy out the back, and he was sort of getting try contributions, and his kicking game was pretty on point too.
I disagree with that. That kick to Eddie Lee on
his kicking game was good.
Good, man.
Yeah,
his was kicking game was really good, and he set that try up for Dom Young too.
They're good good targets, Eddie Lee and Dom Young, air especially.
6'5", 6'6".
Massive.
Mate, Dom Young is a massive cunt. Imagine him coming at you. He is massive.
The physique on the bloke, man, he's fucking chiseled. I reckon with his shirt off, he'd look like an Adonis, for sure.
Yeah. Big boy. Mm. And he was good out of yardage as well. Made a couple of really good runs. And this kind of talks to it. Like, Clune, 72. Milford, 70. Hoy, 62. There's the crux of our spine right there, doing the heavy lifting.
Doing the damn thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Brimson had an 84 for the Gold Coast, but obviously Sexton down the bottom with a 14 is the dud there. Moving on, we'll push on. And this was the marquee match of the round. Builders that. The Panthers, 26, defeat the Roosters, 18. Lukey bit in this one because there was a couple of controversial calls, which we'll no doubt get to. But interesting stat here. Yeah, sorry. Panthers missed 57 tackles. The Roosters missed 53. Maybe a bit of an Origin hangover, potentially, because both squads have a few players in Origin there as well. I really thought Appy was probably the player of the game in this one. I thought he was just outstanding. And I think Damien Cook's got to really stand up, otherwise he's going to lose his spot in the Kangaroo squad at the end of the year if he doesn't pull finger, because Appy's really, really surging forward. Lukey, a couple of tough calls.
I think that Grant and Appy are ahead of Cook at the moment for that Aussie jersey.
That's what I'm saying, mate. That's what I'm saying. Like, he's the incumbent second hooker in that squad, but he's going to lose that jersey. So he's got to do something. But Lukey, a couple of tough calls on the Roosters. You were a bit vocal about, but at the end of the day, Panthers took care of business like they have been every other week this year, dismantling teams basically death by 1,000 cuts again.
Yeah, it was. And look, the Roosters come to play, and I sort of put on socials a couple of times this weekend that I thought the Roosters did enough to win that game. I thought that they unsettled us a bit. The greasy conditions, Manu and Tedesco are hard to handle in dry weather footy. You throw in wet weather footy and, you know, they definitely are a handful, and Penrith really struggle to contain those guys. And just the ad-lib footy that they play, it's very hard to predict and set your defence and plan your defence for, and I think that we really struggled for that. So, the fact that we won is a bonus. I was sort of expecting to lose this game at halftime. I thought, oh yeah, we'll probably lose this one. So I don't mind that we won, and we'll take some lessons out of this one. And I think it's good. I like games like this because they're good learning opportunities for any side that's sort of riding high like the Panthers are. But yeah, I definitely think that the Roosters were reffed out of this game. And early in the game, when the referee was blowing so many six agains and penalties, you just go, you're not going to be able to sustain that. And if you do, you're going to get fucking reserve grade next week because you're going to ruin the game. So, to me, I go, I struggle to believe the theory that teams improve their performance after halftime when they're penalised heavily in the first half. I don't get that because teams are more fatigued in the second half. So when you're fatigued is when you give away more penalties and more six agains and you commit more errors, right? So I honestly believe that the referees changed their tact. And I'm not saying that from a, you know, cheating conspiracy thing. That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying the referees get tipped. They probably get tipped at halftime where they go, hey, mate, you've blown the fucking shit out of this penalty. This is what your stats are at halftime. Maybe just pull that shit back a bit. Because the rate that bloke was blowing the penalties and the six agains was too much. Like, I'm sitting there, I was uncomfortable with it. I'm like, no, they're not that bad. You can't just keep doing that. You're ruining the game, and it definitely felt like that. Kudos to the Roosters for being able to stay in the game despite that handicap that they were given. But ultimately, it was just too much for them, and that's why I believe they probably would have won the game did they not suffer at the hands of the referee. But again, you give Penrith all those opportunities, we're not going to waste them.
Yeah, that's it. And look, I'm pretty sure that Sam Walker try, there was an obstruction somewhere in there as well that they didn't go back and check as well. So, you know, it does level itself out. But that call was fucking horrendous. And, you know, that on that spear tackle was just horrid. Even the way the ref even said when he blew the penalty, he said, I know he didn't mean it, but he still ends up in a dangerous position. Well, fuck, if you ask anyone on the street, just running the ball into a couple of 120 kilo forwards is getting yourself in a dangerous position. So it can't be open to interpretation, right? It's got to be, you know, there was intent. Okay, then it's a penalty. If it was an accident, which that clearly was, then, you know, there's got to be some common sense applied there. And
I don't even think it was an accident, though.
No, it wasn't.
An accident is Carl Lawton. That was an accident.
Yep.
If you ask me, it was careless, but it was also an accident. I don't think he meant to do that. It just, the tackle got away from him there. What Verrills did the other night was a copybook fucking, it's a tackle.
It's a copybook tackle that you're taught as a junior. I can't think of the name of the tackle.
It's a block tackle.
It's a blocking tackle. Yeah. And he just, he got contact and fell with him, but the player was trying to find his front to the point where he actually got the momentum of the tackle and went headfirst into the turf. So it was actually the ball carrier's fault that it happened. It was a shit call, and I think we scored after that penalty too.
Yeah, I think that was the Viliami kick-out try, so absolutely. Benny, any thoughts on the match, mate?
Oh, it was good. It was a good match, obviously. I always thought Penrith were going to get it, but I think Lukey's covered everything, mate. There's not much else to talk about. I thought that Sorensen penalty, as you said, was a bit... That was real tough. They went and scored after that, so sort of thought that was kind of the final straw, that one. But, yeah, look, it was a good game, as to be expected. Joey Manu is a fucking freak. And I think they could do worse than leaving him at six for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think it changes the way they play, but I guess it gives... I think he works well with Teddy because he likes to run the ball and look for offloads. So it gives him... He almost acts as like a middle forward who's got a lethal offload through the middle there. But one thing I'd like to say, lads, look, Marnie's been fantastic this year, but fuck, mate, they couldn't have done this without Sammy Walker. He's been on fire this year. He's been great. And I think he gets lost under the Teddy and the Manu umbrella. But, yeah, he's been great.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Supercoach studs and duds in this one here. Let's have a look. So, Coruscant, 107. He was good. Try and try assist there. Tungo with an 86. Coming back to form there was quite good. Takiaho, 105. That's sensational from him. He's been sneakily putting up some scores of late.
Well, he has got a try, a line break try there.
We'll take that 30 points off him, and he's still got 75 there, which is pretty good.
Yeah, definitely. I think he might have had an offload in one of the other tries. I think he might have had a try assist in one of the other tries as well. So, yeah.
Egan Butcher with a 73. He looked good. He's gonna.
He got a try assist as well. He got a line break try assist. Yeah.
So, all good. Moving on to the first game of Super Saturday. Benny, Sharkies took on the Dogs, and the Dogs, they were looking for three in a row, I believe, in this one. And for the most part, I don't think they were that bad. Sharks got this one 18-6 in the end. Field was a fucking disgrace, and it definitely dictated the match. For all the money that's gone into that stadium, look, you made a good point. Why the fuck is the water pooling in the middle of the field?
Like, every isn't this shit supposed to fucking slope to the sideline?
Real bad drainage in that field.
That's disgraceful. But it is consistently been the worst nighttime football field. You know, it gets to fucking 5:30 PM and the dew point out there at Parramatta and whatever fucking grass they're using on there just holds the dew and it's just slippery as all fucking shit. Like, it is disgraceful for a professional sporting field that they've put money into. Like, Benny, you're a keen golfer, mate. You probably know your turfs. But you got to agree that stadium is fucking shit for ball sports. Oh, it's awful.
Did you see... like it got real patchy. There were like patches of grass in amongst all the water.
It's been like that for weeks, man.
It's terrible. It looks like it's fucking worse than the school ovals here in Brizzy. it was real bad. And then they come back out to play on it again, Parramatta and South, and it was like, man, like.
Or did they? I thought they played at Sydney Football.
Oh, was that ANZ? Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I thought they came both played at a core there. And I was like, oh, using it twice. But that field that Parramatta and South played on wasn't great either, to be honest. Like, it had copped some rain, and maybe the reserve grade game would have been beforehand. And it was fairly chopped up as well, and it didn't drain great. So there's something going on with the drainage of some of the fields at the moment. It's not...
Just quickly, how funny was it that at ANZ they just left a whole heap of lights off?
Yeah.
In the stadiums, and it was just like there was rape corners up the back, and it was shit.
It was like,
where are they playing? Who's that on the wing?
It was like Shaw Sports circa 2006.
Oh. Yeah, that's it.
That was a corner, wasn't it? That was a corner.
The ball went down the rope corner. You're just like, nah, it's gone, boys. New balls. New balls. That's it. But anyway, mate, look, the Dogs missed 43 tackles in this one, which was probably pretty telling in the end. Look, Hines and Moylan are really starting to take control of this Cronulla side. It's a different halves dynamic, and it's something that I like to see. Neither of them are really game managers. Hines runs the ball a lot, but Moylan, he's having a hell of a month. Benny?
Yeah, mate, look, it's starting to come together, but if we've seen what happens when teams pressure Hines, he kind of crumbles a little bit. He doesn't have the long kicking game or the accurate long kicking game, some of the other more natural halves in the comp. But I thought his short kicking game in the second half was elite. I thought it was very, very good and probably the best he's played. His kicking game's been this year. It was very controlled. Didn't overplay his hand. I thought maybe there was a couple of times he kicked when he didn't need to. They could have kept rolling on the back of play and then kick on the last. But all in all, like as you said, Hines has run the ball a lot. The only person that had more runs than him in the game in the Sharks side was Talakai with 19. Hines had 18 runs, which is a lot for a half. Made 121 metres for a half.
That's huge. Yeah. Huge.
So,
but you probably get that in the wet though, because the ball's slower out of half, and if you've got a good halfback, they're not putting their outside men under pressure. So if the defence is already in their face and he's got the footy, you want your half to be taking that run. And I think that's what happened. I watched a fair bit of this game and I saw a lot of times where he'd get the footy and he was just like, nah,
look
fuck
out
it,
and
just,
then just
yeah,
dig into the line.
Yeah, 100%, yeah. Which was the play in these sort of conditions, yeah.
Yeah, no, look, I thought the conditions took away from what the game could have been. I thought Will Kennedy was pretty good under Burton's high kicks in that weather. I thought Kennedy was probably like one of his best games under the high ball. He was very safe. I don't think he dropped one. I thought Multalo and Katoa were really good. As always, you sort of know what you're going to get from them. You get a good yardage game, very solid finishes. So, look, mate, I think we played well. I really don't want Wade Graham out there. I don't know what happened. He went to kick something and he kicked it out on the full. Like, dude, just fuck off, man. Just fuck off. Like, I've been a massive Wade Graham fan for a long time. You know, he was always going to be the club captain for a long time there, and he's passed it. I think the game's just, while he's been out with all these head knocks and stuff, I just think the game's passed him by, and it's a little bit too fast for him now. I thought he was a little better in the second half, but yeah, I definitely think Teague Wilton is the bloke we need to be starting there, and Wade can come on and spell him rather than the other way around.
Supercoach studs and duds in this one. Jeremy Marshall King with an 85 for the Dogs. That man Hines with 96. Goal kicking was very good this game. Had a couple of really nice ones. And I saw Joel Kane on Twitter kind of break down his new kind of run up and preparation for goal kicking, and he's a little bit more squarer on, and that kind of showed.
Hitting those two from the sideline was very promising, because he's pretty much missed everything from the sideline this year, and that's where we score a lot of our points. I think Mulatalo and Katoa are up there in top try scorers this year, so he sort of needed to have his radar on. If it's sort of that new kicking run up and stuff he's got and squares him up and helps him hit him a little bit more sweet, then perfect.
Yeah. All good. Moving on. So the second game on Super Saturday, and this was probably the second game of the round, to be fair. And this was third, taking on fourth, I believe, and that was the Cowboys, who got the job done, 40 points to 26 over the Broncos up there in Townsville on a full on a dry track in front of a full house up there in Townsville. Lads, bit of an interesting game this one. I thought that it was fairly close for most of that first half. But after halftime, obviously the Cowboys came out and put a couple of early tries on the Broncos, who did fight back late. But obviously it was a bridge too far by that point. Look, Reynolds probably had his worst game of the year, to be fair, in this one. And you could tell that he had his ribs in the front of his mind because he wasn't digging into the line. He was worried about the pressure coming from the kicks, and so a lot of his kicks were either too big or didn't have enough depth on them. He put a couple out on the full there as well, and therefore the Broncos weren't really able to gain any ascendancy on the back of his usually quality kicking game. But, lads, the Cowboys, can we call them contenders yet? Because where I don't know if they're quite capable of knocking off a Panthers, but I'm sure they could do what Manly did to the Storm if the Storm aren't on their game, because I just feel like their defence is, well, I think statistically it is the best in the league, if not the second best behind the Panthers.
Yeah, I think they're definitely contenders. I'd love to see them play the Storm. I don't know when they play the Storm again next. And just maybe a couple of, like, you know, they were good defensively against the Panthers, but they still conceded like 20-odd points, and they couldn't score any themselves. So they probably need to be playing teams like that a little bit more. But look, the Brisbane Broncos have been pretty good this season, so, you know, you can't take away from that result. But I definitely think they're contenders, man. They're definitely contenders. What worries me about that result against the Panthers is that, you know, it was so one-sided. You know, they get a bit more footy, a bit more good ball footy, and you never know what happens. So, I think without a doubt you can call them contenders.
Were they missing Taumalolo in that game? I'm pretty sure they were missing Taumalolo.
Yeah, they were, but we were missing someone as well. There was someone that was...
probably Fisher-Harris. I think it might have been Fisher-Harris.
Fairly, big for us, but I mean, look, man, the Cowboys have got some strike all over the field. You know, I mean, they're missing, you know, a couple of edge back rowers now.
Hill and Lukey.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, they have picked up Leilua, which was a good pickup for him, and he was pretty good in his limited minutes the other night, so you can expect that his minutes may grow. But yeah, look, you know, they're really good. They've got strike at 9, 6, 7, and 1. And then, you know, they've got forwards that can really, they can offload and spark, you know, spark attack as well. So, you know, they've got all the pieces. They've just got to put it together against the big teams in the matches that count. And that's probably where they're going to be undone potentially, is the lack of experience in the finals for these younger players. But yeah, look, they're fun to watch, aren't they? They play some really good footy, and yeah, really good to watch. But look, Brisbane again. You know, Brisbane will probably just off maybe a couple of the Origin and representative players. Didn't look great. Did Tamari Martin get injured early? Because I picked up the game probably about 15 minutes in, I think.
Yeah, he did. I don't know what the injury was, but Cobbo went back to fullback fairly early, and his first touch at fullback was like a 60-meter. Against the run of play, scooped up a loose ball in the in goal and ran 60 metres, and it was just like, ooh, this looks ominous. Like, you know, he could definitely make a show of that fullback, that's for sure. But yeah, he did go off early, which fucked him a little bit. And also, Flegler and Carrigan came together in about the 55th minute mark, bit of friendly fire, and Carrigan was a HIA, and I didn't see him come back on for a long time after that. So that fucked him a little bit there too. But, you know, Cobbo had 188 metres. He was really good. And Felt had a great return at 172 metres from him. And he got a try there as well on his return. So he was pretty good. It's hard to see the Hammer getting back into this side, playing any kind of significant role. Everyone's doing a great job out there for the Cowboys. And I think that, the juggernaut keeps rolling. Benny, anything to add to this one, mate?
Not really, mate. I think you guys have got it pretty well covered.
Sweet Supercoach studs and duds out of this one. So we got Tuolungi had a double. He's managed to get a 98. Coates got a 99 for the Broncos in terms of duds. Look, Cohen Hess had a 14, but he had an injury, did come back late. And there's a couple of Broncos. Katoni Staggs, man. And I think Corey Parker was calling for this in the coverage. I think it was about 60 minutes gone, and dude only had 2 runs of the footy. Like, there's some shit happening there with him. And look, to be fair, like, we were pretty high on him in the preseason, but I think there's some demons. Something's going on there. Might have been the Origin dropping, not too sure, but he is struggling to get himself involved in games. And it's not just, hey, they're not coming my way, they're not bringing me into the game. There's no reason why he couldn't get in and do some yardage work, and he's just not doing that. So, yeah, we'll see what happens over the next couple of weeks. Finally, on Super Saturday, rounded off with South defeating the Eels 30 points to 12. And look, unfortunately for the Eels, this is becoming too much of a likely story, where they put a great win together the week before and then come out and put a dog shit performance on the back of that. And this is what happened. You know, both teams in really trying conditions, as you touched on, Benny, before that. But South just made the best of it, and Latrell was fantastic. They all seemed to lift on the back of it. Eels completed at 70%, which is probably not good enough when you're coming up against a quality opposition like South and a hungry opposition like South. South only missed 18 tackles the whole game. So, as you know, like, obviously the game slows down a lot when it's wet like that, but it's hard to hit and stick. But for them to only miss 18 tackles was probably a big reason why they went on to win 30 points to 12. Another interesting stat in this one, South's kick return meters, 302 versus the Eels, 93. So, obviously, South's defense forcing early and, you know, kind of kicks well within South's territory meant, you know, the Eels' territory meant that South got a fairly good run at back, back at the defense, whereas South were dominating field position, were able to just put up box kicks for that. Paulo had 197 meters for the Eels. He was very good, but outside of that, they really lacked someone standing up. I thought their halves were pretty poor in this one. But Benny, how'd you see this one play out, mate?
Yeah, you pretty much covered it. I think the South lifted on the back of Latrell returning. I thought Latrell had a really good game considering what he's come back from. Some fairly severe hamstring issues, and I mean, he's got some haters, but from what I can see, yeah, okay, he gets heated sometimes on the field, but so do people across the NRL. He seems like a pretty good dude, and it seems like he's got, you know, his head on his shoulders now from what he had when he was a bit younger. He's a bit older now. He's a leader in that South team. And the fact that he just said, nah, at the end of the game, like, nah, I'm not going to play for the Blues. I'm putting that to bed right now. I want to focus on myself and focus on South. It's a pretty mature thing from Latrell, which is good to see. But yeah, I think he had a pretty good game. AJ obviously had a really good game. Yeah, one of the best finishers in the NRL and has been for a long time. Give him like the sniff of some space and he finds the try line. So
I thought Tuss was pretty good again.
Tuss was good. I think he is the option over Milne.
He just needs some time, right? Yeah, like he's raw, and I guess that's the thing with Demetrio being a young coach wanting to prove himself. I think that sometimes you have to back the young kids, and when they're putting in effort, like he does have to get some shit out of his game. He's got some bad errors, but at the end of the day, he's a guy who, with a bit more confidence and a bit more game time under his belt, you can see that he will make that spot his own. I think he's the only one that's really had that impact in that spot. You know, they've tried Paulo there. He hasn't worked. They've tried Milne there with mixed success. You know, they've had their options there. So I feel like, you know, now's a good time for him to stand up and make it his own. That's for sure.
I think that they targeted that's Bailey Simonson's edge there as well with their kicking. And I thought the box kicks were really good to him. Cody Walker took a lot of pressure off Ilias. And I think Cody Walker actually kicked more than Ilias did in this game. And I think it showed with the way they were able to contain Parramatta's kick returns.
Yeah, look, the Rabbits had 11 players score over 50 Supercoach points.
Yeah, that's
and
that's
Cody in Cody that, Walker. Those conditions. Yeah, and Cody Walker wasn't one of those players, so it tells you that you know, there was a lot of involvements. And when that happens, you are hard to handle as a team. When you've got attack that's coming from all different directions and it's not just going through, you know, one edge or one certain side, then, you know, you do become hard to handle for the opposition. And, yeah, Parramatta, man, they were just off. And, you know, maybe, you know, the second phase that Madison brings really didn't, well, the fact that they didn't have that really showed that they were just struggling.
Well, it's probably just the rain weather, too. Man.
They
shut
even
down
Paulo,
their second phase, yeah.
Paulo put it away. He wasn't offloading. No one was offloading. So, and then obviously they're missing Madison, who is probably their best offloader alongside Paulo. I just think Parramatta play best, and you know, they put their best foot forward when they can play off the back of second phase, and they couldn't do that in this game. And South ran over the top of them. They don't have another game plan they can go back on. If it's wet and they can't play second phase, that is when they play their best footy. It's that simple.
It's true. They're very expansive and they don't know how to go through the middle. They do, but they don't know how to lock it up and just play safe and high completion football. Unfortunately, this has been obviously to their detriment in this one. So Supercoach studs and duds out of this one. Lucky, as you said, a fair shout by the South players, 11 players over 50. Johnson had 111 and Latrell on his return had 99. So Latrell owners fucking cheering there. Gutho had 73 and Sean Lane had 72 for the Eels. Down the bottom of the ladder here, obviously, you look at blokes like Mike Acebo, and in these conditions, he had to be better. He had to be getting in and helping out. The forwards there, but he's only ended up with a 19. Tom Opacic, what happened to him?
He actually was on the bench. He came off the bench. Yeah.
So that zero doesn't really reflect too much there. So moving on, New Zealand 22 versus the West Tigers 2. First game back at Mount Smart this afternoon. If anybody caught it this afternoon, they would have seen a fantastic spectacle. Pretty glad Stacey Jones was at the helm for this one, because it was a fairly emotional afternoon for the Warriors, and obviously everybody's pretty thankful for what they've done for our competition over the last few years, and it was great for them to get back there and put on a pretty dominant performance this afternoon, holding the Tigers tryless, and obviously one of their favourite sons being at the helm of that in Stacey Jones. So, lads, what do we make of this one? It was a fairly dominant performance without being anything too special from the Warriors. Tigers completed at 86% and only missed 17 tackles, which was the best for the round, but just couldn't score points in this one. They just could not score points in this one, which is obviously fairly concerning. They did the switch, I believe. I didn't catch the second half of this game, but they did the switch where Dewey came on, and I believe Brooks played a little bit of nine.
Yep.
Is that?
Yeah, they did. Yep. Yep.
I think Brown come back on, and Dewey went to 13, and Brooks went back to the halves.
Yep. Yeah. That's what happened. This game, man, was the game that these guys have been needing from Sean Johnson for the whole season.
Yeah.
And this 100%. Is a Sean Johnson that should be able, with being as a seasoned veteran NRL player and a former absolute superstar of the game, there's no reason he shouldn't be able to perform like he did game in, game out, because he didn't do anything crazy. He just controlled the game. He played well. He kicked well. Selective passing. Didn't overplay his hand. Didn't make any silly decisions. And they just kept on the front foot. They kept the West Tigers trialists because they had the better field position because of it. So for the fact that, like, I don't know if it was the homecoming, you just lifted, but that's what they need from SJ all of the time. And it's not too much to ask.
Well, it should be easy for him, mate. He's a class kicker. He's just a talented player, mate. Like, you know, if blokes like Benji Marshall can do it, then there's no reason why he can't kind of sit in there. I thought Chanel Harris-DeVita was pretty good in the one as well, filling in for Reece Walsh, who I thought was going to be a really big out. And fuck, man, like, it kind of shows you how bad the Tigers are going when they lose their best player and still hold you scoreless. So, yeah, look, fuck. I'm not going to dig into the Tigers too much because, you know, I'll just wait for every fucking Twitter page to do that over the next the course of the next week. But yeah, they're in trouble. I think they've got to look. I think Brooks probably needs a bit of a stint. Reggie's, to be fair, and they got to have a look at what they've got in Dewey and Hastings in the halves. And look, Joey O made 58 tackles today, and he's been their best player all year, and you can't tell me otherwise. Hastings has had his moments, yeah, but Joey O, man, how he's not even in the Queensland squad is a little bit disappointing. I think he's tried his fucking ring out, and he's been their best player for sure.
Oh, without a doubt. Just consistency in the middle. A bloke that goes forward, he's got offloads, busts his ass to try and create for that side. But
there's players there that don't want to play. They don't want to be there. You can tell Garner poured through a hole off, might have been Hastings or someone there at one stage out on the left edge. And he was looking for support up the middle. He turned right. There was inside support, but he was sort of covered. And then he looked out to his left, and there was just fucking no one. There was nobody supporting him.
How, like, I don't get Ken Mamalo. Like, his last season at the Warriors, before the mid-season switch, He was like probably a top five winger in the comp. The try scored, the meters and the tackle bus and everything. It was just a beast. It was like Vadavai all over again. But what's happened to him at the Tigers, man? He is just, he left his heart in New Zealand, clearly, because he's just, looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane type of thing. Yeah, but I don't know, man. But there's a lot of plays in that West Tigers side that are like that, that just, they couldn't be fucked anymore. They just don't put in when they need to put in, you know what I mean? It was really disappointing that the Tigers couldn't even score. Like, they just didn't even look like it, hey. I mean, the Warriors
was nothing. There was nothing on offer.
Like, the Warriors had more.
Apart from that one break from Garner, there was no other opportunities to score.
Warriors had twice as many errors as the Tigers. Penalties were only 5-8. 8 conceded by the Tigers, 5 by the Warriors. Like, it just, it doesn't make sense that they were so poor. There was a lot of errors and penalties early, similar to the Roosters-Panthers game against the Tigers. But the thing is, at halftime, they weren't down by much. They were still in it, and you got the sense that if they were to score first, that they would have really opened the Warriors up. But, I don't know.
The Warriors only missed 17 tackles to the Tigers, 39, so that's probably a pretty telling stat.
But I agree, D-Lan. Like, I've been the biggest Luke Brooks supporter out of all of us. You know, I've really said that he's not the problem. You know, he's rah-rah-rah. But I think you're right. They've got to see what they've got in Hastings and Dewey. Because the future just can't be Luke Brooks now. You've got to just let him go. You've got to, because he's too good a footballer to just be trying to bash your head against a brick wall in this system. There's something not going right here. The hooker position, Dane Laurie was pretty ordinary again yesterday. I mean, you know, it is tough as a fullback to make your mark in a game when the forwards are getting dominated and you don't play a lot of field position, but that's Dane Laurie as your fullback, isn't it? He's a tiny bloke. He's a tiny bloke who's not going to give you yardage work. He's not going to give you good yardage impact. He's the cream, isn't he? He's one of those. He's like a Matty Bowen or a Benny Barber, isn't he? He's one of those blokes that is just freak brilliance, but he's not a Latrell. He's not a Gutherson. He's not a Tedesco that just will relentlessly just bash the door down in yardage until, there's an opening. So, you know, there's a few things they need to look at, and I think that's a big thing for the Tigers. I think, you know, not being able to bring their fullback into it is a big thing. So their whole spine is just fucking ordinary at the moment.
But that's the thing, right? And this is like, because we're a bit of a basket case ourselves at the Knights at the moment too. But how can a team like, it's a very, I know they were back in New Zealand this week, and it was shithouse timing for the Tigers. But how can a spine of Randall, Clune, Milford and Hoy put on the performance that we did? Yet you can't get that out of, okay, New Brown, but then you've got Hastings, Brooks, Dewey and Laurie. Like, I'll take any one of those. Well, not maybe not Laurie, but I will take any one of Dewey, Brooks or Hastings at our club right now. You know what I mean? Like, what I'm saying is that what's going on at the Tigers? What the fuck is happening there that's just...
It's a culture thing, man.
It has to be.
I think they know that it's been ruled from the top down, and they've probably all the fucking shits with it, to be perfectly honest.
Oh, there's some grubby shit. All I can say, so apparently Dewey, Hastings and Brooks are all off contract in 24. Next year, they're all contracted next year. I would be shocked if two out of those three are still at the club. I think there's enough clubs getting around that are looking for good halves that are willing to pay a little bit overs to get a Hastings or a Brooks or even a Dewey. And why would you stay? If what they're saying is that they, you know, a lot of them are pissed that Madge is gone, what have they got to stay for? And then there's talk of the Walker brothers coming into the Tigers now as well and whatever.
I fucking love that shit. We're pissed that Madge is gone. Well, why didn't you fucking play for him when he was there?
Yeah, I know.
Come on, cunts. Yeah, that's dog shit. I hate hearing that stuff.
It's a piss take, isn't
it? It's such a piss take.
But you know why players say that? Is because the coach was going easy on him. And he let him fucking take shortcuts. And he let him fucking take the easy way out.
Madge isn't that bloke, man.
But we love him. But he was. Because if he was the bloke that came in at South, the Tigers aren't perennial fucking underachievers like they were. He went into South and turned that around. Yes, it was a better squad, but they bought him in to fucking run them through the ringer and get the best out of players. Now, if he can't do that, then it's the wrong coach for that situation or the wrong players. And they just haven't axed enough players or they kept Madge for too long. Like, to me, it just didn't add up and it doesn't add up. So I get what you're saying, Lukey. But when I hear players say that, it's because, yeah, they were taking shortcuts on his watch and he was okay with it.
Yeah, that's fair. But the way I see it, what he was there for 4 years or 3.5 years, I reckon the first two, he probably pumped the shit out of them. They hated it and didn't respond. And then he went, fuck, I can't keep doing this because they're not responding. Maybe I need a lighter approach. So then he lightens it up, trying to reverse what's happened in the first 2 years. And then they go, yeah, fucking, this is what we want.
They go even further backwards.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas you look at someone, say, like Todd Payton, who was just like, fuck it, I don't give a fuck if these cunts don't like it. I'm just going to keep fucking putting them through it because they will get the message sooner or later. Yeah, it's just, oh, man, I just hate hearing that because I'm like, cunt, you should have played for him while he was there. You should have done more. And probably still to the point that if you weren't performing when he was putting you through the ringer to try and get you into condition and get you better defensively and stuff, well, then that's the same thing, isn't it? Why weren't you doing that?
Yeah.
He shouldn't have had to have changed his approach because you cunts were whinging. You know what I mean? You come and fucking last for a reason.
Their best players are the problem, though. Blokes like Nofaluma, Mamalo, Brooks, Peachy they bought to the club on big money and now they've just
Roberts.
Gone.
Roberts. Peachy never would have fit in a Madge club. He's not that guy. And I don't know why the fuck he bought him. He probably bought him and thought, oh, you know, I can turn him around. And, you know, if Peachy was a hard worker, he'd be one of the best players in the NRL.
But you know where Peachy belongs. Peachy belongs at a top club like Penrith. Just think about when he was at Penrith. We were a finals team. Even like with the Cleary years, the Hook years, we were a finals team. But we had much better players than him.
Yes.
And so he could just come in and just do his little bit of brilliance for 20 minutes a game and look fucking sensational. Right, but he wasn't carrying the team. He was just the cream on top. He goes to a team like the Tigers where they're expecting big things from him because they don't have a lot else and he can't deliver there. Even when he was at the Titans, man. Like yeah, the Titans had... He couldn't, but the moments of brilliance were when they played well and he was just off the back of it. You know, Brimson played well. Fogarty played well. Fifita played well and he was there just like, yep. Yep, I'll just come in here. He was front foot footy, mate. He's a flat track bully. Probably the biggest flat track bully the comp's seen in years.
100%. I agree with that.
Studs and duds in this one. So you've got Tohu Harris who crossed for a try at 85 and Sean Johnson having probably his best game of the year with that 72. Offa Hengawi doing 59 or 58 tackles with an 81 for the Tigers. Down the bottom of the ladder, you got blokes like Jimmy Roberts, 21. You got Star Toa, 26. Hastings, 26. Doesn't make for great viewing for the Tigers, so not much more to say on that one. Moving on to the last game of the round, and if anyone checked weather reports early in the week, they probably anticipated what we saw, which was just fucking horrible conditions for rugby league. Gale force winds at about 75-80 k an hour, and just sideways squalls and rain coming in from all kind of angles. At Wind Stadium there where you can see the ocean, there was whitewash like 150 metres offshore, like 200 metres offshore. You could see it on the footage. So just horrible conditions to play footy. And the 12-10 scoreline to the Dragons, I guess, talks to that. Not many points in this one. It was all kind of one through the middle and the tries were all scored with inside 20 metres. And to that, obviously the first one to Amono was a bit of an embarrassment for the Raiders, so one that they probably wish they could get back. But as I said, St. George have got this one 12-10. Watched a bit of this game, and look, anyone could have won it, but I dare say the Raiders had some opportunities late here, which they blew. Jack Whiten kicking for touch, missed it with the wind at his back. That's just an error you can't make there. Cody Ramsey, after having a pretty good game, I thought, he dropped 3 poms late in the piece, which were all pretty telling. Let Canberra back into it, but Bit of a calamity of errors in this one late, but look, the Dragons get the win. Lucky, how'd you see it?
Oh, yeah, it was just Dragons played the conditions a lot better. Hunt kicked early, they kicked to corners, their kick chase was good, they just did enough. The Dragons are on a dry track, the Raiders are the better team, and they've been playing better footy, but you throw those conditions in, and then that's a variable that just separates the men from the boys. And the Dragons, well, you talk about flat track bullies, well, dry track bullies, the Raiders are dry track bullies, you know, they probably thought they were going great, but you throw those conditions in and then you throw a couple of old heads in there like McCulloch and Hunt, and they just got the team around the footy field, you know, just did what needed to be done, you know, just did enough. And the Raiders had a little bit of that, their talent sort of got them back in the game, but there was some pretty abhorrent football in this game. There were so many fucking errors. It was, I think Jack Whiten had about four errors himself, you know. He was pretty bad today. His Supercoach score won't reflect that, but he wasn't great today. But then you look at, say, someone like Ben Hunt, whose Supercoach score wasn't great, but he did everything that his team needed him to do. You know what I mean? He kicked well. He kicked chased well. He brought his forwards onto the footy. You know, he played percentage footy, played short, he shortened the lineup, he did everything that they needed to do. So the Dragons deserved to win this game of footy, but it wasn't great. It wasn't a great game of footy. Conditions like this never lend itself to that sort of thing. So,
Benny, how'd you see it, mate?
Yeah, look, you sort of covered, mate. It was just those conditions, mate. The Dragons played better in those conditions. It's that simple. One thing I note that you blokes are going to be stoked when you get Adam Elliott to the club next year.
He was great today, mate, wasn't he?
He was really good. He's just an effort player, man. He's in every, tackling everything. His running game's really good. He's got good footwork, good leg speed. He's going to be a real good addition to the Knights. And, Ricky's given him, I think he gave him 50 minutes in this game. I think Elliott should be playing 60-plus at Newcastle.
Well, sure. if the Raiders consider themselves a fucking finals sniff, he needs to be playing 60 minutes.
100%. Because that's just Ricky things, man.
Because he's got fucking off. He's got points in him. He creates points. He scores tries. He's got fucking quick play the balls. Just on another note, Dusty, before you go to studs and duds, but fucking is Joey Tarpany about to lap the field in Daily and Prop of the Year?
Mate.
He's going to lap the fucking field. He's going to take Payne Haas's spot, surely,
His post-contact meters are going to be higher than some blokes' all-run meters.
He's Payne Haas with a fucking offload, which everyone's been crying out for Payne Haas to have for years. He's like, well, that's him right there. And the guy, like, well, Payne Haas is being left behind, man. Like, Payne Haas is turning into Jake Trbojevic. He's not, but you know what I mean? He's just plug.
This is the Joey Tarpany that we've been seeing the potential of for the last 4 years.
But the only person who fucking hasn't is Ricky Stewart.
Fucking 100%.
Look, cunt, look what happens when you give him fucking minutes. He plays well. He wins you games. He keeps you in football matches. Like, he is an elite fucking prop forward. And he's going to be the best. Well, he is at the moment. He's the best prop forward in the game. And he's going to be rewarded with that fucking Daily and Prop of the Year. Without a doubt.
Benny, you obviously didn't see that Twitter story this week that, you know, someone said that he's close to finalising a deal with Cronulla.
No, I didn't.
I don't know how they could fit him in, but
apparently. Because Andrew Fifita's retiring, man. And that's $750,000 out of our cap.
There you go, mate. There you go.
Mate, Joey Tarpany is worth every bit of that $750,000.
And I wouldn't blame him for fucking wanting to get out of Canberra. It's a shit city. And, like, in turn, if you're an elite football player earning a lot of coin and you live in Canberra, like, it's probably not the ideal city to live in. That's what I'm trying to say. And then you get offered Cronulla by the beach for more coin than what you're on at Canberra, and you don't have a fucking basket case as a coach who could literally next year just go, nah, I think you only got 40 minutes in you just don't fucking know.
Well, look what he's doing to Papa Lee.
Exactly.
When the fuck did Papa Lee, like,
when has he only been a 40 minute player? It's ridiculous,
it's unbelievable, man. And Corey Harawira Naira, like, can't make the side. And I mean, they don't.
He took half a season
him.
To put Xavier Savage in at fullback. Like, he's the. Ricky Stewart's the biggest fucking fraud coaching an NRL side in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And
imagine what the Raiders could be with a Flanagan. Or, you know...
Just anyone that's got a head on their shoulders.
I mean, Hudson Young is a weapon on the edge. Like, he's a weapon. I genuinely fear the day that he gets picked to play for the Blues. Because he is the kind of cunt that I do not want to see in Origin. He's tough. He's got shit in his game, which is great for Origin. He doesn't take a backward step. Runs a great line. Got good ball playing. He's a package man.
What about the kick and chase he did 2 weeks ago? That try that won him the game versus Newcastle?
Yep.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's just... But how long did it take for Ricky to go, oh, yeah, he's an 80-minute player? So what, he misses a few fucking tackles. Big fucking deal. So does half your fucking side. So do half the players in the NRL. Coach the shit out of him. Coach him to be better. Don't punish him by sticking him in Reggie's or fucking giving him half the game time. It was like you were saying with the younger... I don't know who you were talking about before about... The player that's got a few errors in him, and you were saying it earlier on, Dusty. I don't know which player it was that you were referring to about it, but it's like if players do have errors in them, sending them back
to TAS.
That's who it was, yeah. Sending them back to Reggie's, cutting their game time, it just puts doubt in their mind, and it makes it next time they get the call up thinking about those errors. The Jimmy Maloney's, how he used to just wash fucking errors, that's because he never got dropped. They just persisted with him, and he just kept, you know, I don't give a fuck, I'm just going to keep firing shots.
And just kept winning comps.
And it just, but it just kept coming off for him, because he's like, yeah, those errors are, yeah, so what, they're errors. Yeah, whatever, but I'm gonna create points for us. So,
and I'm pretty sure he led the league in missed tackles for fucking years.
Yes, like, yes, he
was,
did.
He was a walking missed tackle.
Yes.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder if, like, if coaches are quick to drop a rookie that they've bought into league, I wonder if that's because they've bought them in too soon. You know, they kind of feel like, well, maybe he wasn't ready. Well, maybe that's on you for not actually, you know, I kind of feel like a lot of kids get a crack really early and then they're gone. They come and they go. They make a massive deal out of getting their debut, but you don't see him again for the rest of the season.
I was going to say this when you were talking about Isaiah Tuss, but coaches get their reputation on performance, right? So winning's the first thing. You win, you turn a team around, that's what you make your name on, right? Your wins and losses, your ability to turn a team around. But aside from that, so shelve that, the other thing, and look at Hook Griffin, that you can make your name on is how you develop youngsters. And it doesn't have to be a whole team. It could be 2 or 3 or 4 youngsters that you bring into grade, and if they start to perform under you, then that reflects on you as a coach, right? Especially if it's someone who's hasn't been brought into grade by another coach or has had a few cracks at a couple of other clubs and hasn't been successful, but then they do it under you, you know? That's another thing, though, like, aside from the wins and loss column, that can actually build a reputation for a coach is your ability to get out of players who haven't had any experience in first grade or have and no success. Your ability to make them into first grade footballers is a thing that can establish you as a first grade coach. So I don't know why more coaches don't think like that and go, just give this kind of crack. I'll fucking coach him into being a good football player. You know what I mean? One player.
Case in point, Moses Sully.
100%.
Like, the guys in the top 5 centres in this game this year couldn't put it together for years under Desi at Manly. Couldn't get it together. Showed some promise last year. Hooks jumped on him. He looks like a machine this year. And he is just owning defences in losses for the Dragons. He's consistently their best. So, yeah, I agree. Like, I think I'm quick to knock Hook, and probably rightly so on a lot of things he does, but his talent recognition and development is pretty good.
100%.
Are we studs and duds here? We've waffled on about that a bit. But
we have studs and duds in this one, and obviously there's going to be some overnight updates in this last game. But at the moment, that man Sully's on 71, Jack Bird 62. My man Jack Bird, chase on Jack Bird.
62. He's gone 55, 62 after I wrote him off and told you to get rid of him.
Well, yeah, I think it was about
all
that,
the stats. So. All the stats pointed to get rid of Jack Bird.
Oh, absolutely.
He almost got a fucking try early on too today.
Yeah, I know.
He got ankle tapped with about bloody 3 metres to go and just got levelled and didn't score. So he could have got a lot more.
Joey Tarpany with an 85 in probably base and base power. Hudson Young with an 83, and that was with a line break try. Down the bottom of the ladder, you got blokes like Tomoko with an 18, which is pretty ordinary.
Cody Ramsey, probably.
Cody Ramsey, 24.
VNA with a 17.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you look at those scores and you go, they are pretty shit. Benny Hunt with a 28, but those conditions, man,
those
like
conditions,
in a 12,
yeah.
12-10 score line, there was just no attack in it. So... but nevertheless, you know, you don't want to see those on your team. You know, if you've got them, if you're holding them in your Supercoach team, especially if it's draft anyway. So, lads, how you doing quickly in your matchups? Benny, you're walking it in.
Yeah, I'm going to get up by 100 or so, depending on today's updates. But I'm ahead by 100, and he looked pappy, and I still got him.
Very good, mate. Very good, Lukey.
I'm going to take this opportunity to officially say now, when you ask me where I'm at in my matchup, that you're going to be referring to Legends League, because I'm officially just fucking not commenting on my side anymore.
Just floundering in the head bin.
Oh man, I put up scores that beat half the league, but I can't win games because I never get the fucking matchup against the other fucking blokes who don't score. You know, like. I'm probably going to, you know, I might get close to 700 this week after upgrades, and there'll be half the comp that don't do that. But my man, you know, didn't. My opposition put up a score, you know, fucking looped Cherry Evans a score. So I'm officially just going to comment on Legends League as if it's my team now, unless I win. And then I'll fucking, then you'll hear about it.
Okay, but, yeah, we're good. We're good.
But yeah, Headbin, we're going to win it easily against NRL Physio this week. So,
can I just point out, like, why you say you're putting up scores and that, and, you know, just copping bad weeks? You've scored 10,185 points, which is only 40 points more than Googs total.
Yeah, but the point being is probably in the last six rounds. Maybe not that many, but at least the last four rounds, I've outscored half the comp, some. And I just can't pull that match up. So yeah, that's what I'm whinging about. So
okay.
Every other loser in the comp this week would be filthy that they're not playing me because I've put up 509 points.
My case in point.
Score.
Yeah, case absolutely. It's horrible. After I'd won five in a row, and then my team just goes, actually, you're getting too cocky. Somehow. And I've come crashing back down to earth with a 509. Lucky to even get 500 points, to be fair. It was a shocking week for me. And my opposition had probably the week of his year. Scored about 8 or 9 tries in his team. And it's got me in the end. So, unfortunately, taking the L this week. But, it's never great going into the bye round with an L.
I hate it.
It's good to sit fucked.
On. Good to sit on a win through the bye round.
That's it.
I'll have a 4-pack too to get me through the bye round.
Yeah, fuck you.
Thanks, Dusty.
All right, lads. Thanks for jumping on tonight. This will be out early in the morning. Very glad to see the back of the last bye round of the year. This period of the year shits me to tears every season. It makes it very clunky if you don't play bye rounds.
Like,
which
it's
we
a tough
don't.
Slog, eh?
It really is, man. It really is. You go fucking rep round into a run round, and then you go a bye round in the end. So hopefully round 18, back at it.
See you, boys.
Cheers, boys. Catch up.
Ciao.